In the court together this morning, court to order this morning. Do we have anyone that'd like to volunteer to do the prayer this morning? Joe, you want to do that? Good.
Dear Heavenly Father, we come to you this time asking the Lord you please be with the men and women over the county that they may guide the court and with some honest decisions. Dear Lord, be with the men and women we have overseas. Please bring them back carefully to the family. And dear Lord, help us to remember what the true meaning of this holy week is. In Christ's name we pray, amen.
Amen.
If you'll join me in our pledges to our American and Texas flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Honor
the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to the Texas, one state under God, one and indivisible.
Record reflect that all members of court are present. Commissioners will need a motion to approve our commissioners' court agenda.
I move.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries.
Proclamations
and resolutions. 7A, we have the Montgomery County Walk Across Texas Communities Challenge in partnership with United Way. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having us today. So we have come upon our fourth annual Walk Across Texas Community Challenge that we do in cooperation with Montgomery County United Way. Some of my friends from United Way are walking from the Woodlands. Not really, they're walking from down the street, but they're on their way. So this is our fourth year. We're in conjunction with them. We started out with 69 teams in 2013. We had 105 in 2014, and we ended 2015 with 106 teams. So our goal for this year is to have more than 200 teams, and I know that Montgomery County can pull together to do that. We have Yvonne Welther with us today. She works for our Better Living for Texans program, and she can offer classes that are walk and talk to go along with the Walk Across Texas. This is Josh Merrillett. He's our new FCS program assistant, and so he's here to provide support for the program. And then Jenny Adams is our FCS coordinator at the Extension Service, and she's available to offer support as well. And then Maria and Jody from the Healthy Living Alliance will be here soon. And they put together prizes and incentives for everyone who participates in Walk Across Texas this year. So without further ado, I'd like to have the resolution for the Montgomery County Walk Across Texas Community Challenge. Whereas Montgomery County United Way's Healthy Living Alliance is a local coalition whose mission is to empower the people of Montgomery County to seek their highest health potential by promoting healthy choices through education in nutrition, physical activity, and health literacy. Whereas Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Service offers practical how-to education based on university research, including raising children, eating well, managing money, and staying healthy, and the mission of Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Service is improving the lives of people, businesses, and communities across Texas and beyond through high-quality, relevant education. Whereas Montgomery County United Way Healthy Living Alliance and Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Service are cooperating together to promote further collaboration and action in local businesses, schools, faith-based communities, and organizations to inspire healthy choices in every aspect of life. And whereas Montgomery County United Way Healthy Living Alliance and Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Service each serve Montgomery County's thriving communities, and whereas the Healthy Living Alliance and A&M AgriLife Extension have examined scientific research and determined that promoting healthy eating, physical activity, and health literacy in the community are vital to improving the lives of the citizens, and whereas we have determined that the Walk Across Texas program provides program components that can create significant health impacts and potential health care cost savings for the county residents. Therefore, be it resolved that in the interest of providing the means for Montgomery County residents to attain an optimal level of health and economic stability, the Commissioners Court of Montgomery County recognizes the Montgomery County Walk Across Texas Community Challenge and encourages participation throughout the county.
Good deal. Thank you for your presentation.
Thank you again. We have a new updated website, easier to use. We want to have as many people as possible participating in the months of April and May. So teams can start on or about April 1st. It's totally up to them. Teams of up to eight, you can have more than eight, but at least eight, but not more than eight. Or people can walk across, can do it individually as well. And the idea is that we virtually walk across Texas. So we do as much physical activity as we can to equal that 833 miles, which is roughly the distance from Orange to El Paso. Have any questions?
That website is.
The website is, thank you, www.walkacrosstexas.tamu.edu.
Good. Good deal.
Oh, and our United Way friends are here. This is Jody and Maria, and they put together, like I said, the great incentive cards, lots of discounts, and everybody who participates gets those, and then we'll have prizes for, like, the team that walks the furthest this week, the individual who has the most improvement another week. So lots of good stuff for Montgomery County residents.
Good.
That's
good.
Wonderful. I move.
Thank you,
sir. Thank y'all for coming.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Thank you very
much.
Thank
you.
All right, item B, National Public Telecommunications Week.
Good morning. My name is Matthew Walkup. I'm Communications Manager for Montgomery County Hospital District. I'm going to read a resolution, or proclamation, sorry. To designate the week of April 10th through 16th, 2016 as National Public Safety Telecommunicators Week. Whereas the Montgomery County Hospital District provides 911 dispatchers who work daily to protect and promote the public safety of the citizens of Montgomery County, Texas. And whereas dispatchers are more than a calm and reassuring voice at the other end of the phone, they are knowledgeable and highly trained individuals who work closely with medical, police, and fire personnel. And they offer quality care that dramatically improves the survival and recovery rate of those who experience sudden illness and injury. And whereas the members of the emergency emergency dispatchers and other communication specialists who help to protect our health and safety and engage in thousands of hours of specialized training and continuing education to enhance their life-saving skills. And whereas the Montgomery County Commissioner Court hereby supports and recognizes the Montgomery County Hospital District communications personnel as an integral partner to the citizens of Montgomery County. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Commissioners Court of Montgomery County, Texas, do hereby proclaim the week of April 10th through 16th, 2016, as National Public Safety Telecommunicators Week.
Deal. Great. Appreciate what y'all do.
Thank you.
I move.
All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you. Appreciate what you guys do. Rotary Club of Magnolia.
Thank you, Judge. Commissioners, the Rotary Club of Magnolia every year acknowledges our club members and residents of Magnolia who have exemplified service above self, which is what Rotary is all about. And with me this morning is Candace Cabot. She's our president-elect of our Rotary Club of Magnolia, and myself, Deborah Rose Miller. And we wanted to make a presentation, really an acknowledgement of Charlie Riley. He was honored with the club a few weeks ago for his community activities. We know you know him as the commissioner, but we'd like to say at Magnolia we kind of know the whole person, and we wanted to share with you today exactly why he was honored at the club and a little information about the Rotary Club of Magnolia. Mr. Riley is the founding member and past president of the Magnolia Education Foundation. He was the creator of the first major fundraiser, which was Weekend with the Arts, so maybe so much for your redneck image there, Charlie. He's the past MISD trustee and board president, where he served for three terms and ran unopposed. Past vice president of the Friendship Center, board member of the Magnolia Community Foundation, past board member of the Montgomery County United Way, member of Montgomery County Search and Rescue, member of the Magnolia Lions Club, and lifetime member of the Montgomery County Fair Association. He also serves as the music team leader for the Magnolia Cowboy Church. And one of our traditions in Magnolia is when we honor our citizens or our club members, we always give a quote from Paul Harris, who is the creator of Rotary. And in one of his speeches with regard to servant leadership, I'm going to read a quote that was actually given in 1916 that we feel definitely represents our Charlie Riley. "The rise and fall of civilization will depend upon the thoughtfulness or thoughtlessness of man. The greatest thing that can happen to man or nation is to stimulate the individual or the national thoughtfulness." Charlie, that is who you are to us. And this morning, Candace is going to give you a little memento from the evening. Thank you.
I don't even know where to begin to thank y'all for all what for what y'all do. So thank y'all very much, and
I'm greatly honored. Thank you, Darrell.
Congratulations, Commissioner. Well deserved. Next, we have the Lake Conroe Communities Network presentation. Mr. Massey.
Good morning, Commissioners.
Morning.
Morning.
It's a safer place here. I couldn't get through your metal detectors without taking out virtually everything. So our colleagues in Belgium are not doing so well. I hope you received a copy of the presentation I'm going to read from so that you've got something to work against. My name is Michael Massey. I and my fellow LCCN officers and board members are here to present and discuss LCCN's 2015 petition drive and its overall findings. We set out to make three critical presentations in the aftermath of the petition and all the work of 2015. The first was to meet with Lone Star, which we did on March 8th. The second is today to meet with you. And the third is Thursday morning. We will meet with the SJRA board. The presentations are tailored in each case to more specifically fit the audience that we're talking to, but the themes are very similar. You can find virtually all of the materials out on the homepage of our website for those of you who are not able to get a copy. I think we have a few here that we can offer. I'm not sure what the protocol is for putting those out, but so let me turn to my remarks. An unprecedented 3,100 plus members of the Montgomery County community signed an LCC petition which sought to, number one, suspend restrictive 2016 groundwater use regulations that are driving complete dependence on alternative and very expensive water for most existing and virtually all new water county demand. And second, to reassess, underline reassess, the health and environmental and economically practical capacity of Lake Conroe, a surface water source that is incredulously a key part of the viability of the Lone Star Groundwater Regulation Plan. This time, that reassessment with a much more real and complete participation of the local community. The community at large neither embraces Lone Star's basis nor accepts its actions to restrict groundwater use in the county. Furthermore, the community rejects Lone Star's reliance on a set of alternative water resources and scenarios for their supply, which devastate all of the traditional aspects of the county's water resource management system and severely threaten the health and economic development potential of the county and the region. Lone Star's regulations, one, force the establishment of Lake Conroe as the first and primary source of alternative water, with a clearly stated policy to destructively consume the entire permitted annual withdrawal rate of 100,000 acre feet a year. And secondly, the regulations de facto establish SGRA as the monopoly controller of all water resources in the county, both current and future. With regard to surface water, at least they have some accountability under their 1937 stated charter mission, which I quote to be develop, conserve, and protect the water resources of the San Jacinto River Basin. But their second activity, which is growing rapidly in groundwater, which is totally outside the scope of the state chartered mission and unacceptable mission creep even for a government agency. In repeated testimony in 2015, LCCN made clear to Lone Star that any action to carry through the regulations would produce the above effects and would result in illegal regulatory structures that would not survive challenge. Since then, the city of Conroe and a set of private water producers have sued Lone Star back in August of last year, challenging the legality of the foundation and structure of those regulations. While Lone Star so far sought to block the movement of that suit at every turn, the court and now the judge are finally in place, and we will soon begin hearing plaintiffs' motion for summary judgment. Full prosecution of the lawsuit is in the best interests, and I capitalize that for you in my written, of all of Montgomery County, not simply Conroe. When fully prosecuted, Conroe believes that the lawsuit will put an end to Lone Star's 2016 regulations on purely legal grounds. Regardless of the outcome, it will establish the framework for all groundwater regulatory development in the county going forward. Beyond such precedent-setting legal clarity, there will, however, remain a long-standing set of critical issues that finally must be faced up to, addressed, and resolved before any plans for regulatory development can be considered and developed. The Commissioner's Court to its presentation to Lone Star on March 8th for a complete discussion. I'm not going to go through the core of what we did on March 8th. I'm going to focus more on what I think is important for you to hear. First of all, the framework for our discussions with the court this morning. Number one, the role of the court in economic development. The Commissioner's Court is the de facto leader in spite of a range of limited explicit statutorial authorities. I'm sure it must be frustrating at times. We are clearly in a sea change that must be managed boldly and creatively to be successful. This is a rural county rapidly becoming an urban center, and we're barely at the beginning of all of that. That's the sea change. Court leadership and engagement of the community is necessary at every level of this sea change, including and particularly where it currently lacks its statutory authority. We need to step up in the leadership box. There is no one else. Unique quality of life factors. Montgomery County has unique quality of life factors that discriminate it from the other counties competing for Greater Houston's businesses, workforce, and infrastructure. Number one, trees. Number two, Lake Conroe Reservoir. And number three, the terribly underutilized so far, Sam Houston National Forest. Greater Houston is competing nationally as never before for young professionals who have options for employment all over the country. This segment of the workforce values quality of life factors enough that Montgomery County offers unique leverage to corporations in their efforts to attract and win national competitions for young workforces of the future. The Commissioner's Court must have a purview over the protection, proper handling, and development of these unique factors for the county if the county is to meet metro-wide economic development expectations for this county. Water resource management. Proper handling of all dimensions of water resources is central to the county and its ability to achieve and sustain its growth. They come in the groups of groundwater and surface water, which is effectively the Lake Conroe Reservoir. As the solely elected body that spans countywide interests, the Commissioner's Court must be actively involved and championing the county's rights and interests in each of these water resource assets. The rest of the remarks are focused first on groundwater and then on surface water. Court authorities, responsibilities, and accountabilities relative to groundwater. First of all, let me summarize to make sure we get the key points before we get into any more detail.
Instead of reading the whole thing, Mike, if we can kind of summarize it, we got a lot of
I think at a minimum, let me read the summary in each of the two categories, and, okay. and we can decide how to go from there. Let me try that, see how that works. The court has the authority to interact on groundwater. It holds two seats. It's the chair of one of those board seats that have swing controlling votes on the 9-member Lone Star board. Appointees work for the court and are accountable to the community through the court. The court must lead using its appointees. The most basic ethical traditions in government demand that the court recognize and do all that is necessary to deal with obvious, irreconcilable conflicts of interest in the Lone Star board's composition. The first step is establishing that those with conflicts abstain from discussions and votes that in any way can be perceived as engaging those conflicts. Court must accept responsibility for decision making of its appointees by directing its appointees to recognize and resolve indefensible rulemaking that does not protect the county, rather exposes it to chaos, destroys local control, and replaces it with a monopoly control by forces completely outside the county's jurisdiction. And lastly, the court must embrace ethical accountability by calling for and supporting the county's 5 state legislatures to restructure board appointments through an amendment to the Lone Star enabling legislation that has invited the destructive ethical conflicts of the current board. You can go into the details. I'll try that, Craig, and see if it works. Let me jump a couple of pages to surface water. There's another summary there. Let's see if that will be adequate.
Okay.
With respect on the summary level, first of all, history. There's a lot of confusion here that we live with virtually every time I go to meetings. History that's important. Number one, Lake Conroe Reservoir was never designed as a primary drinking water source, and Houston's rights have never been invoked for drinking water. Until SGRA's launch in 2009 of its quote-unquote alternative water campaign, Lake Conroe Reservoir had a consistent 35-year record of fulfilling its core missions successfully. SGRA's imposed new mission and its unilateral version of a quote-unquote options contract with the City of Houston over water rights greatly expand the pressure on and ultimately destabilize the lake and the economy of the entire region, all at dramatically increased costs to the community for water. Modern era realities. This is our way of trying to remember that sea change really is what it sounds like. The lakes concept was 1945 to 1950. We're now living in 2030. Those differences have got to be accounted for. By 2030, county population will be 1 million, and the Lake Conroe Reservoir will be surrounded by nearly 500,000 people. When originally planned in 1950, the whole county was only 25,000 people. While the impending completion of the Houston access to Lake Livingston water continues, Houston's narrow and limited needs and usefulness of water rights in Lake Conroe Reservoir will cease the day that the permits for transfer of water happen.
Do you have some closing comments, some way you can summarize this?
I'm literally within a couple of paragraphs of being finished. Commissioner's Court must lead and take charge of the county's interests in Lake Conroe Reservoir water going forward, first discarding SGRA's damaging costly options contract with the City of Houston. Number 3, sedimentation is a critical long-term threat to the economic value and viability of the lake. It will preferentially attack the lake's shallower perimeter areas, the areas of highest economic value, and it remains totally unmanaged. The lake's capacity to absorb water diversions, most notably this 100,000 acre feet a year for drinking, depends entirely on rainfall capture by Lake Conroe Reservoir's watershed. The average lake evaporation rates now exceed the rainfall rates, and the gap is growing. So the lake itself can't sustain itself on average. The lake's watershed is small, 448 square miles. That's less than 8% of the San Jacinto River watershed. And the average rainfall rates are suspect relative to areas closer to the coast. Despite its importance, simplicity, and low cost, SGRA has never established any watershed rainfall monitoring program. And let me close with a summary of what the real mission going forward in the modern era needs and has to be. Number one, we need to have a stable lake. You can debate exactly what stability is, but I'd say plus or minus 2 feet gives you a good visual around the 201 full. Optimize the use of current phase one, but suspend plans for phases 2 through 4 of the drinking water withdrawals program that will otherwise continue. Arrest, reverse, and avoid future damage from sedimentation. Gentlemen, that is huge. Lake Houston has lost 20 to 25% of its entire capacity since it was opened. The sedimentation rates in the two lakes are well measured by the Texas Water Development Board, and they're basically the same. That wouldn't surprise you. But all that sedimentation is falling in the shallower parts of the lake, right where the economic development value is highest. In droughts, transfer of water from Lake Livingston. Thank you, Houston, for the transfer permit. Suspension of lake water withdrawals for use as drinking water. In effect, lean on groundwater hard. In El Niños, which we've been blessed by currently, maximum diversion of excess water to drinking water. Cut back as much as you can on groundwater use. We have $1 billion invested now in the ability to make those swing moves. We need to use it. The rest is detail, as they say. Thank you, Greg. Questions?
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Well, you know, we do have two appointees, and recently appointed a new member of the board. And we, you know, the reason I specifically asked that he be appointed was I went and sought out someone that was not involved at all, that wasn't on either side, didn't have a dog in the fight, and asked him to go do his homework and find out what the facts are. And there's a lot of information here that needs to be digested. In fact, commissioners, this is probably a good subject for a workshop at some later date. There's a lot of information that we probably need to hear. I did ask San Jacinto River Authority to come today to make their comments to this report and concerns, but I do know that in talking with Jace Houston, they said that they've started their first phase of conversion. They used about 4.8 inches of level off the lake this year so far, and they've let 7 feet go because of the heavy rains we've had this year. And according to Jason, an average year we have 48 inches of rain. They would over the course of a year let about 7 feet of water go down the San Jacinto River. So I know that there's a concern for the lake. I have a strong concern for the lake. It's an economic engine for us, certainly. But we also have to be mindful of taking a lot of water out of the ground, what that does to future generations. And I know that's what Lone Star's task and their job is to make sure that we preserve enough water to continue to manage the development and growth that we're seeing coming. So,
two comments, Craig, before we move to someone else. Number one, the presentation of Lone Star was focused on the question of whether the sky is falling, whether we really have a groundwater problem that's compelling us to use surface water this way or not. We have very strong, well-supported opinions about that, which I will not distract this moment for. You're welcome to read our materials. We've been working, trying to get Lone Star to respond and deal with it for a long time now. So far, not much. With regard to the fall of the lake as a result of man-made removals, in the first 3 months of the year, the lake fell at what annualized is a rate of about 1.6 feet a year. That's got to be a combination of drinking water the plant is now up and running and contracts that San Jacinto River Authority has for water in industrial settings or a whole variety of users of lake water. Very much the intention when the lake was built, but whose total consumptions are relatively small. But the combination is now somewhere between 1.6 and 2 feet a year. This is a good time of year to measure it, since the weather is such that we're not getting any evaporation contribution, so you can see it very clearly. The lake is under a fair amount of stress. The question is whether the situation on a 10-year rolling average has changed. You know, the classic financial remark is history is no good forecaster of the future. It's a bad forecaster of the future stability of the lake, too. Appreciate those comments.
Thank you, Mike. Greg, would you like to address any of that, or anybody from Lone Star?
Yeah,
can.
Okay.
Good.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We did prepare some information. I do want to pass that out. Thank you. I want to thank you for the chance to come and speak today. My name is Greg Hope, for those that don't know me here. As you may know, I've recently been appointed to the Lone Star Groundwater Conservation District, and I have to say that I have learned quite a bit in a short amount of time. And there are really two items that I wanted to address today, and I'll try not to take up too much of your time. The first is the issues of water and conservation are real. This is not something that's fake. It's not something that we made up. It's not something that the legislature or the other 99 water districts in the state of Texas made up. This is real issues that we're dealing with. I believe that the Lone Star Groundwater District is providing the leadership necessary to bring us forward, to make sure that we have enough groundwater for the future. That's basically my vote of confidence that we are doing what we're supposed to be doing. Second, we've been blessed with people who have dedicated themselves to the science of water. Smart people like Bill Milliken, who is here with us today. We are lucky to have someone of his caliber to help guide us in the right direction. He is the former Deputy Executive Administrator for Water Science and Conservation at the Texas Water Development Board. And I had asked him to come here today and talk a little bit about this presentation so that we're all talking about the real information here. So, Bill, if you wouldn't mind.
Good morning. Yes, my name is Bill Mulliken. I'm here on behalf of the Lone Star Groundwater Conservation District. I just want to real briefly go through a lot treatment of what is a very technical topic, and that is the discussion of groundwater availability in Montgomery County within the jurisdictional boundaries of the Lone Star Groundwater Conservation District, and in particular focus on this concept that I suspect all of you have heard, which is this concept of the total estimated recoverable storage, or TERS, and what that means to groundwater management in Montgomery County. So, if you will, turn to this first page here, and I'll just sort of walk you through this real quickly. This is just a conceptual diagram of a dipping aquifer like what is present here in Montgomery County, primarily with the Gulf Coast aquifer system. And as you can see over here on the left-hand side, you have the unconfined portion of the aquifer, and over here on the right-hand side, you have the confined portion of the aquifer, and the vast majority of the groundwater resources in Montgomery County are in the confined portion of the aquifer. And that's really what I'm going to try to help you understand a bit better today conceptually, is what does it mean to have this confined aquifer, and why is it a natural resource, and why is it a natural resource that's worth managing and protecting? And the only way that it's really hard to do that when you just talk about an unconfined and a confined aquifer. So if you will, let me give you an analogy. Let's say this room is an air compressor with an engine that's running and keeping the air pressure in here at 80 pounds per square inch. And so when you have the hose and you release the air off, the compressor turns back on and puts some more air in the tank so that you continually maintain that IDPS out here. So you have real air coming out, real force coming out. And the reason that you have something of value, you have this compressed air coming out, is because you continually add pressure from the compressor to the air tank. But if you unplugged or you turned off your compressor and then you released the top of the pressure tank, it doesn't mean there wouldn't still be air in that air compressor, in that pressure tank. It just means that when you went over here to push the release valve on your air hose, the air is going to come out, but it's going to come out at a very, very, very slow rate. And in fact, the economic value of your air tank has now been taken away from you. Well, that's exactly what we're talking about when we're talking about the value of the Gulf Coast aquifer system here in Montgomery County. The value of the aquifer to Montgomery County is this beautiful natural resource you have, in that you have this pressure that's pushing down on your resource way over here up in the north in the unconfined portion of the aquifer, and pushing down on the aquifer so that when you drill a well into it, that pressure forces the water into the well and allows you to have these incredibly productive wells in the Gulf Coast system. If you take away that pressure, if you turn that compressor off of your aquifer, then the value of that resource is going to be greatly diminished. Another important point to remember here, and I'm just going to show this USGS cross-section here, is that this is sort of like the no man on an is on an island. Montgomery County is not by itself in this. This isn't your county boundaries do not restrict or inhibit or enhance groundwater flow in any form or fashion. You are part of a large regional system. And so clearly what you do has effects on your neighbors, and vice versa, what your neighbors do has an effect on you. So now I'm going to go just quickly to this TERS concept. TERS is a term that was introduced in the Texas Water Code in 2011 in the form of Senate Bill 660. It's something that the groundwater management areas have to consider as they're adopting desired future conditions for what they want the aquifer to look like in the future. And TERS is a very, very, very simple approach to looking at how much water is in the ground. So it's just a pure volumetric calculation. And the Water Development Board, when they produce these reports, they're very, very careful to articulate that while there's this much water in the ground, they are not there to suggest that all of that water can be taken out of the ground because of factors such as it may cause subsidence, the socioeconomic impacts of getting that water back out of the ground may prohibit it, and there's a number of other factors that can affect whether or not you can get that water back out of the ground. So, for example, for Montgomery County, you have 1,077 square miles. On average, the aquifer is 1,751 feet thick. And if you apply a general rule of 15% of storage to that, you come up with 177 million acre-feet of groundwater in the Gulf Coast aquifer system in Montgomery County. And so you've heard a lot about this 177 or 180 million acre-feet of groundwater that's out there. We have nothing to worry about. It's no big deal. Why are we managing this resource? Well, the reason you're managing that resource is there's two really important components to storage, that storage calculation that you need to take into consideration. One is what is called the unconfined storage, and the vast majority of the water that is in the aquifer is in unconfined storage. And then there's the confined storage, which is a very small fraction of the storage that's in the aquifer. The confined storage is there because you have this gravity forcing water down into your aquifer that causes it to be a confined system in the first place. And so if you look at it numerically, only about 0.46 million acre-feet of the water that's in Montgomery County is in this confined storage. You take away that 0.46 million acre-feet of water out of the Gulf Coast aquifer system, and you've totally eliminated all your artesian pressures in the system. Now you have that air tank that you've turned your compressor off and you've taken the lid off the top. So, yeah, you can get some water out of there, but your ability to recover that water is going to be greatly reduced as a result of that. And the numbers down at the bottom of this page, I'll point one to you, and I'll talk about it again here in a minute. So the thickness of the jasper on average in Montgomery County of the confined storage is 711 feet. So why does this matter? Well, if you look at this hydrograph, here's some combined hydrographs of a number of wells here in the central Montgomery County area. And what you see is that over the first 50 years of significant production in the Jasper Aquifer in Montgomery County, we lost about 200 feet of our artesian head. We lost 200 feet of that pressure that's pushing down the water into the Jasper Aquifer that makes it a confined system. In the last 13 years, because of the accelerated rate of production of groundwater in Montgomery County, we lost another 200 feet of artesian head from the Gulf Coast Aquifer system. If you go on to the next page then, and here's what I really want to focus on. So here's a hydrograph from a well here for the city of Conroe. And you can see what would happen if we took that remaining 0.46 million acre feet, or in fact, in this example, what we did was there have been suggestions that we should take 2% of the storage. That's all we want. Just 2% of the storage out of the aquifer and we'll be good. Well, if you took 2% of the storage out of the Gulf Coast Aquifer System in Montgomery County, out of the Jasper, not out of the whole Gulf Coast, but just out of the Jasper, then you would have a resulting decline of 728 feet of artesian head in Montgomery County, in the Jasper. Well, what would that do to you? That would totally remove all of the artesian head in Montgomery County from the Jasper. Now, remember, a couple of slides ago I said, remember the artesian head of the Jasper is 711 feet. So you have now taken away all of your driving force, all of the natural pressure that has been put on this system. You've now eliminated that if you were to take 2% of the water out of storage out of the Gulf Coast Aquifer System and out of the Jasper. Why does all this matter? Is this all hypothetical? Sometimes you'll hear people say, this has never happened. No one has ever been able to take all the artesian head off of a confined aquifer system. This is just, you know, the sky is falling, the sky is falling. Well, it's not falling. In fact, if you go to this slide, this is a slide of the state of Texas that shows the historic declines of water levels both in confined and unconfined systems. And if you look up there in the Dallas-Fort Worth metroplex area, they have another confined system, steeply dipping system, very similar to the Gulf Coast system that you have here. It's called the Northern Trinity. And in the 1880s, they started drilling their first few wells in there. And over the course of time, they've now caused 1,200 feet in Tarrant County, which is where Fort Worth is. They've caused over 1,200 feet of decline in their artesian pressures, such that now water levels in areas of Tarrant County have now gone from confined to unconfined, and wells that used to produce thousands of gallons per minute of water now produce about 15 to 20 gallons a minute of water. So it can happen. It has happened. It happens all over. It is happening more and more. It's happening in some of our neighboring states where there are ongoing studies, like, for example, in Arkansas, even along the Mississippi River in the Sparta Aquifer. It's started out with this huge stick artesian's head, now it's gone to unconfined conditions, and it's no longer a beneficial use because they can't get the water out of the ground anymore. So just in conclusion, as the district is going through, as Lone Star is going through, looking at this issue, it's an issue that we take very, very seriously, but there are other secondary things that we have to also consider. For example, when we reduce all these artesian pressures, what are some of the impacts, for example, with respect to water quality? What is the technical practicability of being able to produce more than the 64,000 acre feet per year that the district has currently got in its management plan? What is the economic feasibility of doing this? You know, we hear all the time about, well, oh yeah, we can get that water out of the ground. If, even if we have to lower the water level 700 feet, we can get that water out of the ground. Well, the practical reality of it is your well yields are going to decrease as you go lower and lower. And so there's going to be a point in time where you have to make a decision, is it really going to be worth $1 million, $1.5 million to drill a well that's only going to be able to produce 50 gallons a minute? Or do you have to go to something else, like seawater desalination, which is going to be significantly more expensive than the options that you have on the table today? Environmental issues, for example, the impacts on stream flows, land surface subsidence. Land surface subsidence still remains an issue, as is demonstrated in the most recent USGS publication of the Houston Area Groundwater Model for Montgomery County. Well yields are going to decline. We know they're going to decline.
Well, can we kind of wrap up? As you're...
Impacts on existing wells, and I'll wrap it up right there and see if you have any questions.
Yeah, we probably need to save this conversation for a workshop at some point. There's a lot of information to be digested here. We obviously need to be concerned about conservation and preservation of our water resource, as well as we need to be concerned about lake levels and the cost of that water. So that's something I think we probably need to put a workshop together next month, maybe have the Water Development Board here even, have them give us some of their concerns or their thoughts as well. So, Commissioners, would y'all entertain that workshop next month?
Sure, sir.
To talk about some of these issues?
Absolutely.
Sure.
Okay. Good. Good.
Thank
Greg,
you for your time,
thank
Judge.
You for coming.
Thank
Mr.
You.
Massey, we need to kind of wrap up here. We're going to wrap up, Mike. We're going to come back next month.
I actually did a clock on you. And
Mike, we're going to wrap up here. We're going to do a workshop
fine.
Next month.
I want to make clear.
Mike.
Judge, what's noticed was a presentation by Lake Conroe. It's getting
more like a workshop right now.
Past what may be noticed, so we recommend that you end the discussion on this.
Yeah, and that's what we need to do. But we will set aside a workshop next month to hear both sides.
May I make a specific...
Mike, please, we're going to move on. So, thank you. All right. Commissioner, you had a presentation you would like to make real quick, too.
Judge, if you would, I've got some good news. I don't know how many of you have heard, but week before last, TxDOT Aviation had their yearly conference out at La Tureta. The year before, they had it at San Marcos, New Brunswick, and Scott Smith was named Reliever Airport Director of the Year for the state of Texas. Thursday before last, they named our airport as the Reliever Airport of the Year for the state of Texas. We've now got the Director of the Year. We've got the Airport of the Year for the state of Texas, I think, which speaks volumes for where our airport has gone in the last 10 or 15 years. I have a resolution here from Representative Metcalf. I'd like to read real quickly, please. Whereas Conroe North Houston Regional Airport is being honored as a Reliever Airport of the Year on March 10, 2016 at the 34th Annual Texas Aviation Conference hosted by the Texas Department of Transportation Aviation Division. Whereas Reliever Airports serve to reduce congestion at larger commercial airports and to provide community access to general aviation. Constructed in 1939 by the Civil Aeronautics Agency, the Conroe North Houston Regional Airport now functions as a Reliever Airport for George Bush Intercontinental. It employs more than 380 people, handles some 2,500 annual flight operations, contributing an estimated $33 million to the local economy. The facility currently hosts over 300 aircraft, U.S. Army Reserve Aviation Unit, several governmental agencies, and more than 20 businesses. And whereas in recent years the airport has made substantial investments in infrastructure rebuilding and extending its runways, commissioning an aircraft control tower, constructing the Galaxy fixed-based operator complex, completing a parallel taxiway project, and whereas Conroe North Houston Regional Airport continues to grow and improve, and this significant recognition from TxDOT is a fitting acknowledgement of the vital role the facility plays in the dynamic economy of the metropolitan area. Now therefore be it resolved that Conroe North Houston Regional Airport be congratulated on its selection as the 2016 Reliever Airport of the Year by the Texas Department of Transportation Aviation Division, that the facilities management and staff be extended sincere best wishes for continuing success. State Representative Will Metcalf. God, I want to... We even got a plaque. I want to congratulate Scott and his small staff that he has that operates this airport. They believe in us. Obviously, Texas, the aviation division of TxDOT realize the importance of our airport. I think they approve, they strongly approve of where it's gone in the last 10 or 15 years. They see the value, and I think this court sees the value when the runway extension was awarded by TxDOT. The court stepped up, added a 500 feet extension to that, which makes us accessible for any kind of aircraft. So I think the court sees the value, the community sees the value, and this just tells us that we're doing something right. Scott, congratulations. Thank you.
Congratulations, Scott. And that airport is a huge and growing asset for the county. Commissioner, appreciate your work out there as well. All right, Commissioners, we need a motion to approve our minutes from our regular session dated March 8th, 2016.
Move.
All in favor?
Aye.
Commissioners, I have no changes on the consent agenda and would entertain a motion to approve our consent agenda.
I have one correction.
Okay.
Section F, number 2, D, reads 615-43620, and it should read 615-43620.
436210.
436210. That's the only change I have, Judge.
Make a motion with that change.
I'll make a motion.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Now we have our citizens' comment. Mr. Mayor, we always like to recognize elected officials, so you'll be
thank
our first.
Thank you very much. Judge, Commissioners, thank you for letting me be here this morning. Representing Citizens Oak Ridge North with a resolution to you regarding our support for you and the thoroughfare plan for Montgomery County. Like everybody else, we had the opportunity to go to the meetings with HGAC held in Shenandoah back in November. I think you all realize that we are basically, if we're not at ground zero, we're so close we can touch it down there with all the traffic issues and things like that. And you need to know that we support you. And I will say, in all honesty, I did have one council member that threw his nay vote out there in protest because the past plan has not been followed like he wanted it to be. And I agree with that. We all have plans, and they all change. And in these cases, sometimes plans get delayed. But I want to tell you, we need a plan. You've got a plan. And I represent five other small cities other than us on Mobility Transit Authority Committee type thing. And I want to tell you, we're all in because we have to work together on this. And so by being here today, I also want to say that all the other communities in all of Montgomery County, whether we're incorporated or not, we need to get together and work through this problem because this is a problem that's not going away. It's going to get worse. I drove over here at 8:30 this morning. I-45 was bumper to bumper from 242 all the way past. Well, I don't know how far south it went. I quit going there after January 1st, but I'm telling you, it's a problem. I appreciate your leadership in making this happen. We got your back. We'll do what we need to do to make this go forward, and we appreciate your doing this. So here's our proclamation, and I don't even know who to give it to. I guess one of these young ladies over here.
Mr. Mayor, thank you very much.
Thank you for your work on this. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor.
Is there anyone here today that would like to address the court on an item that is on today's agenda? Any citizens would like to address the court on an agenda item today? Okay, seeing none, we'll move forward. Number 11A, Sheriff.
Good morning, Judge and Commissioner. On 11A, I asked you to consider and accept $32,920 in funding from the 2016 HIDA grant. Benefits will be funded from the Sheriff's 5601 budget. grant application was submitted on our behalf.
Questions or comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you, Sheriff. Constable Precinct 4. Constable Hayden.
Good morning, Judge, Commissioners.
Morning, Constable.
I lost my place here. 12A is consider and approve the grant request form in the amount of $5,756.63 with a match of $2,835.36, which will be funded by Precinct 4 Commissioner's Office. Authorize the Constable Department Precinct 4 to apply for a community development funding grant from the East Montgomery County Improvement District for the purchase of a mobile traffic sensor. Approving a resolution in order to include the grant application.
I move.
Second.
Questions or comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you, Constable. Community development.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Please consider and accept an addendum to the agreement between Montgomery County and Mission Northeast regarding the Mission Northeast Warehouse Project. The original agreement was signed in court on October 28th of 2013. The Precinct 4 offices stepped in and fixed a problem we were having with the drainage ditch, and we are remanding responsibility for maintaining that ditch over to Mission Northeast.
I move.
Second.
Questions or comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tax assessor collector. Good morning.
Good morning, Judge, Commissioners. I would ask that you consider and approve the following position changes, and I'll read them if you want me to, but it will not affect the current budget.
Move.
Second.
Questions or comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. All right. Library.
Move.
Happy to do so. We're just simply asking that you accept a policy in our disaster and emergency plan that would allow library administration to monitor the situation if there's a power outage that's going to last 2 hours or more, that for the safety of both the individuals using the library and of library staff, that we would continue what had been done for a number of years, but has been interrupted because we understood that that plan we thought had been brought to court had not, and so now we're officially asking that authorization.
I move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you.
All right. Office of Court Administration. Mr. Jensen.
Good morning, Judge, Commissioners. Today I'm asking you to consider and approve a memorandum of understanding between Montgomery County, specifically the Veterans Treatment Court Program, and Tri-County Behavioral Health Care. This is for adding them as an alternative treatment provider for that program.
Move.
Second. Comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nate. County Auditor.
The first item before you is a request to consider and approve the budget packet for the 2017 fiscal year. If y'all approve this, we'll be mailing out those packets tomorrow.
Move.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries.
The next item is a request that you consider and accept the 2015 Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. This is for your year that ended on September 30th, 2015. I'll go through it relatively quickly. It's an abbreviated version from prior years because you've all seen some of these in past years. To remind you, a Comprehensive Annual Financial Report is made up of three sections. They include the introductory section, which has a transmittal letter and an organization chart of the county in it. There's a financial section where we have a report from our independent audit firm. Your independent audit firm is Weaver, the CPA firm formerly known as Hereford Lynch. Also included in the financial section are your financial statements, some charts and graphs in the notes to those statements. And in the statistical section, which is the last section, you'll find some financial trends. Those are usually 10-year format, where we have 10 years worth of data, and where we don't, it's as many years of data as we do have. We're going to focus primarily on your basic financial statements. Those statements are twofold. They're government-wide statements, and they're fund financial statements, and most emphasis is placed on your fund financial statements, although we will talk a little bit about your government-wide financial statements. Those are an attempt to compare a governmental organization to a for-profit business, so it includes some adjustments that for many years weren't included in financial records of government. Those government-wide statements include, well, you'll find in the management's discussion and analysis, this chart and the one on the next slide, and they are comparisons for that government-wide analysis where there's an attempt to break down expenses and revenues of the county by function, which you'll see in this slide, to see what function of the organization might pay for itself to what extent. So the blue lines here are the revenues and the red lines are the expenses. The only one where the revenues exceed the expenses is the Road and Bridge Fund. The others are all supplemented by your general tax dollars. They don't necessarily have enough fees and dedicated revenues to pay for themselves, which is why those are indeed governmental functions. In your fund statements, we focus primarily on the general fund. That is where most emphasis is placed by bond rating agencies as they look at your financial statements. In your general fund for fiscal 2015, you had revenues a little bit in excess of $220 million. Your expenditures were a little in excess of $204 million. And your other financing sources and uses were about $10 million, which would have been an expense if you wanted to relate it that way. Those include transfers primarily to your other funds where they don't have enough revenue to support themselves. So your jury fund or your memorial library fund is what's in that $10 million worth of transfers. That left you a net change in your fund balance of an increase of $6 million. That fund balance gets broken down into a few different categories. They include the ones that you see on your screen. Just for a little bit of a reminder, I know we've talked about it before, but restricted funds are those ones that are restricted by other entities. They might include your grant funds that you still hold that haven't been expended yet, so maybe emergency management grants. They also include the funds that are in your debt service fund. So that tax was levied specifically for retiring debt, and so it's restricted. Committed funds are commitments that you've made as a governmental body. So those include things like encumbrances or any funds that you might have set aside for the Joe Corley Detention Facility, or I'm sorry, for whenever you sold the Joe Corley Detention Facility. You restricted those funds for future needs at existing, or to update jail needs. And then lastly are assigned funds. Those include funds that primarily for us are dedicated for other post-employment benefits. Unassigned funds are defined as anything that don't fall into those other categories. And those are the funds that you have the most flexibility with, and that's what we talk about whenever we say you're looking for a fund balance range. So speaking about your unassigned fund balance, you do adopt a policy every year, and your policy states that you'd like to keep between 10 and 15% in unassigned general fund balance for events that may come up. So they primarily include things like the majority of your tax revenues come in December and January, but your fiscal year starts in October.
Do we statutorily have to keep a certain percentage in there?
You don't statutorily, Judge, but you do by a good practice.
And that represents what, 2 or 3 months of operating expenses?
And that is the goal, yes, sir. It's usually up to 20%. And so you are at 20%. That's been a long time coming. Y'all have worked on that for years. It's not like you can just make that all at once.
Right.
And so that is a great step for you guys. Lastly, I'd like to talk a little bit about our bond ratings. We sold bonds this past year, and your ratings were reaffirmed by Moody's and Standard & Poor's. That was with the issuance of your 2016 refunding or the first portion of your road bonds that were issued. If you have any questions, I would be glad to address them. Also, Tom Sellers and Shelby Lackey are here from your CPA firm that you retained to give an audit opinion on these financial statements.
Sounds pretty good.
Then I'd ask that you please accept this report.
Move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Thank you, Phyllis.
Next, I have a request.
Thank you, Tom.
Next, I have a request that you consider and approve allocating some revenue for that capital project that for the jail that we just very briefly mentioned earlier. During last year's budget hearings, y'all asked that the revenues that came in as a result of the contract that we have with the GEO Group and the taxes that are from that Joe Corley facility go specifically to that capital project fund. We've started that with your 2016 budget, but my recent understanding is that y'all had wanted that to begin with when that was first sold. So we're asking to reallocate those funds from prior years, 14 and 15, since those contracts went into place. The reallocation that we're looking for is a little in excess of $1.4 million, and it'll go from your general fund. It'll come from your general fund,
okay,
and it'll be a transfer that we'll book to your capital project jail fund.
Okay. Yeah, that'll just build that fund so that when we do something out of the jail, we've got it cash on hand. So, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries.
And then finally, I ask that you consider and accept the federal single audit report. This report's required for any government or nonprofit entities that receive in excess of $750,000 a year, or that expend more than $750,000 a year in federal funds. Montgomery County had in federal funds a little in excess of $16 million, and in state funds about $19 million, for a total of $36.6 million.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
So, Phyllis, in general, we're in strong, strong financial shape and looking a little better every day.
Yes, sir. I do believe, and it does state in our financial report, that Montgomery County does is in a very good financial position. As we talked about earlier with our fund balance, it has improved over the years. In conjunction with that, just as a reminder, you've also paid down some outstanding liabilities that you've had, primarily your retirement system liability. Montgomery County's is funded at about 90%, which is in excess of most entities, which are closer to 80%. So y'all are really doing a great job financially.
I heard a comment the other day that Harris County is a AAA bond-rated county, one of the very few. Is there a chance we could get there?
We did discuss that with our bond rating agencies with this last issue. The concern that they primarily had was the overlapping debt in the county, so not necessarily things that you can control. So it included debt from, say, your school districts or your MUDs or your cities. So not necessarily anything that you could do anything about that.
That has an impact on our rating?
Yes, sir, because what they look at is the ability of the citizen to pay back the total debt,
okay,
which includes your overlapping debt.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good deal. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Purchasing.
Good morning, Judge and Commissioners.
Morning.
A, take all appropriate action to approve granting a discretionary exemption for only one source as authorized by local government code 262.024A7A for Real Vision Imaging software hosting initial application license and setup in the amount of $10,000 per Justice of the Peace 1, 2, 4, and 5, and the annual support of RVI Imaging 5,000 per Justice of the Peace for a total of 60,000. RVI is to be integrated into existing net data application from Graves Humphrey Stahl LTD for various JPs.
I thought we did this out of the
The funding will be out of, and that was approved last Commissioner's Court, or February 23rd, from the Justice of the Peace Technology Fund.
Yeah.
This is just another part of it. The first was for some scanners, the hardware, which is being purchased off as current contract, and this one is for the software for the scanners.
Is this an exception to the $50,000 rule per vendor? Is this what we're looking for, a variance? Is the $60,000, I mean, you've got $50,000, or let's say one, two, three. But the second item is $60,000. How do we, is that what you're looking for as a variance?
Well, it's a discretionary exemption. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yes.
Will this come out of the technology fund also?
Yes, it was approved February 23rd.
Yeah, that funding was approved. Now
we're the end of it?
We're just approving
is
the purchase.
Is this all of it?
Huh? Yeah, we just approved the funding last time. We're just approving the purchase this time.
Okay. The hardware was going to be purchased. Second. Now this is for the software for the scanners.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries.
Thank you.
County Attorney.
On item 19 A and B, Tim Buds from Craig Harris here to discuss. The first is with respect to the annual report, and the second one, there's a slight change. We'd ask the court to consider and approve the appointment of Victoria Morgan, psychiatrist, for active status. And in the paperwork, it says active status, but the agenda needs to be corrected.
I move.
Good morning, Judge and Commissioners. Just a couple of highlights from our report. The report that we're presenting it has been reviewed in detail and analyzed by Commissioner Metter and our advisory board. Some of the highlights are that we provided service to over 300 patients during the past fiscal year. Our outcomes are consistently better than the national averages as reported by the National Research Institute. Our number of employee and patient injuries significantly were reduced during the past fiscal year. Mechanical restraints were not used at all during 2015 and in fact have not been used at our hospital since 2012. Our average days to restoration was reduced to 90. And finally, we had no unauthorized departures, elopements, or escapes from the hospital during the past fiscal year. So overall, Correct Care had a very good year, and we ask that you accept our annual report.
And what's the state's average for return to competency as far as days?
It's generally, you know, the report that we can get is around 117 days.
Great job.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion carries.
That's on both of those items. We didn't vote on the first.
B, Commissioner.
That's 19 A and B. Yeah. I move.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, Tim.
Thank you, Tim. Appreciate it. Keep up the good work. We now need to recess our Commissioner's Court to convene a public hearing in Precinct 1.
Consider to approve establishing a 35-mile-per-hour speed limit on Welch Road from FM 149 to Talaferro. Anybody here to discuss that this morning? Not, Judge.
Okay. Precinct 3.
Consider and approve establishing a no-through truck zone on Legends Run Drive between Rayford Road and Burnham Woods Drive. Any public comment? Judge, I see none.
Okay, we now need to adjourn our public hearing and reconvene our Commissioner's Court.
I move on 20A1B1.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Commissioners, Precinct 2.
Consider to approve the following position changes. Closed position 613-2900-600. Transfer $5,514.96. Salary and benefits to position 613-1602-1. Park maintenance. I move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries.
Consider and approve resolution and order permitting the American Diabetes Association access to certain roads in Precinct 2 on April the 23rd, 2016. Move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Precinct 4.
Consider and approve the resolution authorizing the filing of an application for community development grant funding by the East Montgomery County Improvement District to convert existing tennis courts and AV Silas Park into basketball courts. The anticipated cost of improvements will be $21,152.88 with a 50% match, $10,576.88, and the cost to be funded by MSED. If they approve the application, designate Commissioner Jim Clark to sign the application. Any documentation necessary to effect the same on behalf of the county. I move.
Second.
Commissioner. And if I could, the 88 cents, if the clerk could correct that in the notes, that's actually being funded by Commissioner Precinct 4,
okay.
Not MSID.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, yes. I see a correction here on my side notes. Thank you.
All in favor?
Aye.
As amended, yes.
Motion carries.
Okay. Consider approve a cell phone allowance for position 6331-9522-1, Animal Shelter Director, in the amount of $960 per year plus benefits. Funding source to be line item 615-7997. I move.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion carries. Now I need to recess our Commissioner's Court and convene a meeting of the Montgomery County Toll Road Authority. Under 22A, consider and approve a supplemental engagement letter with the Mueller Law Group. That's to do some additional legal work on our toll roads.
Move. Second.
Questions or comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Now you adjourn our Montgomery Toll Road Authority meeting and reconvene our Commissioners Court meeting. Human Resources.
Good morning. Please consider and approve the payroll change request forms.
Move. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Motion carries.
Judge, we can actually move executive session out to here. If
that's fine. Yeah, BD had mentioned that earlier, so we don't need to recess for executive session, but BD, you want to bring item 24A?
Yes, Judge and Commissioners. This is all we need is a resolution order to authorize us to commence proceedings to collect money owed to Precinct 3.
Move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion carries.
And clerk has a written order on that.
Great. All right. Now, do we have any citizens that would like to address the court on items that were not on today's agenda? Yes, ma'am. Let me read this brief statement. We will now invite public comment to address the court on any items not on today's agenda. Please state your name and topic of your comment before beginning your remarks. A public comment may not exceed 3 minutes. Questions or concerns about the operations of Montgomery County programs may be referred to the department heads or elected
Judge,
officials.
We need to change a bit.
Okay. Well, it's going to be a 3-minute talk. In Texas, open meeting law prevents the court from deliberating or taking action on matters raised before public comment. So, is there anyone that would like to address court? Yes, ma'am. Please step forward.
Good afternoon. First of all, I want to thank Mr. Riley for helping Big Tree Estate stop that development. Now I come to you for another help. Our little subdivision, Big Tree Estate, is just a small subdivision, maybe 60 homes on it at the most, maybe not even that many, but it is being overtaken by businesses. We have one business that is supposed to be a flyball academy of adult training slash exercise building, approximately 6,000 square feet. It is being built illegal without permits. The men are out there early in the morning pouring slabs at 5:30 in the morning. They're gone by 9 o'clock. They resume at 3 p.m. I have tried everyone I had to help me. You're my last hope. You are my last hope. So we right now have a school that it's on 14211 Horseshoe Bend. They house or they teach 20 students. They're getting to expand to 40 students. The traffic is horrible. They feel like they own the road. They park in the middle of the street. They leave their doors open. Then we have a moth that come by ever so often, flying by the street. Something bad is going to happen before something is done. This is not a unrestricted. It is unrestricted, but it does have restrictions that were put there 30 years ago. And my neighbor, who's been there 30 years, said, oh, I just thought that they just wore it out. No one's paying attention to them. We have a couple of homes that have been made into businesses. One of them is just good stuff, a resale shop. It's an eyesore. They pick up garbage and put it, there's metal all over the place. My daughter and I went to check it out, and we got bit in the garage by fleas.
I'll be more than happy to meet with you after court if you would.
I would love to.
I'll meet with you right after court.
Thank you so much. And again, thank you for your help already.
You bet. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Anyone else that'd like to address court this morning? All right. Seeing none, entertain a motion to adjourn.
Move to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor.
All right.
Can we make it?
We're adjourned.